New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to West by Pod, a podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 Conference, and digging yourself out of the hole. I'm Joel Bracken at WV Stats Guy, joined as always by Jordan Pinto at Game Day Shorts. Jordan, you said it right before we started recording. I think it's rained three times all year in West Virginia, and two of them have been during West Virginia games. We get our second extended weather delay. Just another weird football game, and very, very much mirroring last week's, but this time we come out on top. What was your roller coaster of emotions on Saturday?
Yeah, I had a whole lot of angry notes written down. You know, related to the rain delay and just related to the way that we played, where, you know, it just was starting to feel like maybe this year just was not meant to be. You know, just kind of starting to feel like kind of a cursed football season. And then, you know, Garrett Green stopped listening to the play calls and started trusting that golden retriever brain and, you know, pulled us back from the brink of, you know, I think probably a pretty ugly season. You know, I think you lose that game and it's really hard to see the next month going well. You know, maybe you limp back in the last third of the season and get close to 500, but, you know, it was hard to see us having a good season if we lost that game and guy just wasn't having it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, football gods probably owed us that one. You know, I think you could make that argument. And yeah, you know, I know there's a lot of mixed emotions about it, but you know, if I ever get to the point where I'm not able to enjoy a win like that, then, you know, what are we even doing here? Just take me out to the pasture. So
no, that's a good point. You got to throw all context aside. When your team wins a game like that, you got to feel good about it. And you know, the rest of the season's going to come and the coaching situation is going to be settled at some point, and you know, all those things will happen. But you win a crazy football game that you know, there was definitely a point in time when I didn't feel very confident at all. We were coming back from it. Just the parallels to the Pitt game were pretty impeccable. Pretty much the last, I guess you would say, the last six drives of both games were like so identical, it's insane. Yeah. Where it's like score to go up, two scores but less than two touchdowns, you know, score, three and out, get the ball back, score, take the lead, and then force a turnover, you know, in a desperation final drive with no time in the clock. I mean, it was crazy. Weather delay. I mean, yeah, just ugh.
I was going to say, I mean, it's worth noting we came back from 11. So, you know, objectively, a slightly better comeback than Pitt's. So, yeah, I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, and I do think, I think I texted this to you, but the two-point conversion, I think, was was kind of a roller coaster of a play in itself. It was the Philly special play. I always recognize that play. Everybody's got that in the bag for a 2-point conversion, I feel 100%. Like. But it's a great play. Cole Taylor makes an amazing catch in the back of the end zone to get the two. And you never know. I mean, Kansas was moving the ball. If that, you know, if we don't get that, obviously it's a 2-point game. Kansas is going to be driving with a field goal to win instead of needing a touchdown. Maybe, you know, the desperation is a little different there. They're not going to be going for it all on that play. So yeah, I think that was like definitely a important play that kind of maybe gets forgotten just with the crazy chaos of all that stuff. But man, gutsy win. This podcast was going to be really sad if we had to come in here and talk about.
I don't know if I would have made it, man. I don't know if I would have made it to this one.
I mean,
taking the bye week, and then I would have seen you all in 2 weeks, man.
I think right before the turnover, Kobe Bryant made the play on the ball. I mean, you know, we're driving up 7, moving the ball, have a chance to go up 2 scores. Kind of felt like we were in control of the game early. You go into half 14-7, and I still felt fine. I was like, you know, I feel like we left some points on the board, but feels like we got this game. And man, we lost the third quarter. I think that's an understatement. I mean, we looked bad in the third quarter.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, dude, you're just more parallels to the Pitt game, right? You know, they came out and what I think a 75-yard touchdown drive, and then we get the ball back. We might have gotten a first down, but, you know, didn't. I don't even think we got across midfield. Kick it back to them. They go right back down and score. And it was just like, oh, okay. And, you know, I think the discouraging thing is a lot of running the ball. Right, which we've been pretty good against, you know, so it's nice to know that whatever a team feels committed to, they're able to do on us, because, you know, they didn't throw for a ton on us, even though they did miss some big plays. We can get into that. But yeah, it was one of those situations where it's like, oh, shit, if they're just going to run the ball, you know, and they're going to get 7, 8, 9 yards every single carry, like this is probably going to get really ugly. And that carried over into the fourth quarter. But yeah, no, I mean, guys stepped up. It was the exact opposite. I mean, really, you know, we're just going to say it 100 times. Exact opposite of last week. Winning time came up, and our guys started making plays, and their guys started messing up. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it felt like Neil was really vindicated. You know, I thought the post-game comment was really funny. When you've been doing this as long as I have, things tend to even out. And I can't remember if it was in the Discord or on the message boards, but somebody was like, yeah, for 500 coaches, things do tend to even out. And it's just, I thought that was really funny.
He was feeling himself in that post game though. Like he was laughing and smiling and just, you know, I think he needed it.
We all did. I mean, I don't know if he would have gotten fired, like this week, but you're looking at this season and like, if you're going to get fired midseason, it's probably a bye week, right? So like you lose that game by 2 touchdowns at home when your back is against the wall and you absolutely need to do it. I mean, that's, you know, if you're looking for a spot, you know, I guess the other one is if we come out and just turtle back up and go 0-4 in October, we have a nice bye week after the Arizona game. So,
we highlighted it last week, just like, the opportunity is still there in October, man. You can write your own destiny in October.
Yeah. But no, overall, I mean, felt really good to win one. You know, I said it on the pod, I was not in attendance this week, saw my daughter play a soccer game. And that was a pretty hilarious experience, watching 4-year-olds play soccer. Because, you know, you have the one or two girls out there who are already aggressive and can kind of move the ball in the direction that they want to. And those people they score like 12 goals, you know, just every time they touch the ball, they go score a goal. And then there's other people who, you know, either don't move or don't want to play or, you know, anyways, but so that's what I did this weekend and then watched it at home. And yeah, I'm just texting all my buddies in the stadium, and the crowd that was there at the end of the game, there couldn't have been more than 5 or 10,000 people. And I was just like, man, that's like exactly my kind of crowd that I want to be a part of. You know? Yeah. So it's a fun crowd to be a part of when you hang out and stay for that kind of thing. And then you see a win like that, like that's a pretty peak. Yeah. I think we talked about, or I talked about it last week. Like when you put a lot into it, stuff like that, it doesn't get much better. So felt good to win.
I'll ask you this question. So what are you taking forward from this game? So obviously we're into a bye week. We had a lot of injuries. If you look at the schedule, a bye week in week 5 is not my favorite pick, but after the way this game sort of played out, really glad we're going into a bye week. Yeah. You take a nice win with you. You take a lot of banged up guys and get them healthy, hopefully. And I'm sort of like, okay, we know we have an incredibly tough October. Lots of things to play for, especially in this conference. When we talk about the Big 12 later, I mean, this conference is already so fun. Like, what, like 1.5 weeks into people playing conference games? We're in here for that. So, I don't know. Are you taking positives forward? Or are you taking, you scrap out a win and we see what we got again? I mean, I don't know. What are your big takeaways moving forward?
I think there's two that I would highlight. I think the first is Garrett Green. So the last 5 minutes, Garrett Green, right? Like, that felt like the guy that we watched last year.
Yeah.
He was not sitting in the pocket and waiting for things to develop. He was looking at one guy, and if that wasn't there, he was using his legs. And, you know, I think that's another thing in the post game. Neil was like, yeah, you know, I'd like him to check it down more. And I was like, well, so, okay. So what we're saying here is we'd like him to do the thing that he has struggled with for all of his almost 20 starts as a quarterback, and do less of the thing that he is like elite at nationally. And it's like, he kind of finally in the last 5 minutes is like, no, I'm just going to do the thing that I'm really good at. It's the thing that made him one of the most dangerous quarterbacks in the conference in the country last year. And like, we need to, we need to play to our strengths, Joel. It's one of those things, you know, you hear it, it sounds like a weird thing to say, but it's something that I think maybe we need to do. It does feel like an indictment of the staff that, again, we kind of fall backwards into something that, you know, out of necessity, and it works, right? Which is a shame that it has to do that. But yeah, I think, I don't know if we need to go fast all the time, because our defense does have struggles. And if you go fast, it can lead to problems for the defense. But I do think situationally, maybe a couple drives a half, you do go fast and just see what happens. Because there's no doubt that he is at his best when we are moving, when he is on the move personally. When he's one read and he's out, that's what he's good at. I think that our team feels it. So, you know, it's fun when you get 12 yards and you get right back on the ball and the defense is like, okay, what are we even doing? You know, I think the offense gets confidence from that. You know, the offense can kind of feel that uncertainty. You get confidence from it. So I think we need to lean, we need to lean more into that. And then my other takeaway is that, you know, I think skill position wise, like, a lot of our guys are kind of what they were advertised to be. And I think I texted you this. I think I texted most of my friends this. Is like my weekly takeaway of, we have too much talent for it to look as hard as it does sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You have guys like Hudson Clement, who it seems like he's open all the time. He catches everything. He had, I mean, God, that would have been an incredible touchdown catch to win the game. Fortunately, I think we might have been the next play that we scored on to Rodney. But, he was open. He's hard to tackle after the catch. Catches everything. Traylon Ray is another guy who seems like he is just always open.
And he was open on the second pick.
On the second pick, he was open. Yeah, on a corner. It was going to be another touchdown. Yeah. Gallagher, you know, I think that was the most snaps he's ever played offensively. I like that he didn't play on defense, but it seems like, you know, you got those guys who they all kind of fit together. The skill sets work together. And then Cole Taylor, like, right, where the hell was Cole Taylor for the whole game? And then like the last two drives, he has like, what, 3 or 4 huge catches. He has the 2-point conversion, which is, I don't know. Yeah. The takeaway was just, we have too much talent. Like, we got to do a better job of figuring out how to put these guys in spots to be successful. Lean back into throwing down the field to them. Cause like you said, I mean, Clement's open. Ray's open deep a lot. He is open deep a lot. You know, I don't know he's not a burner. I don't think necessarily, like, he's not like a 4-3 guy, but he's like a long strider. And you look at him and he just gets the defensive back off balance. And then he's just passed him in 2 steps. We just need to lean back into that. I don't even know what kind of an offense you'd call it. But like RPO heavy, play action heavy, deep ball, you know, try and stress the defense, you know, 3 ways, right? Stretch them side to side, stretch them up the middle with the running back, stretch them deep with the receivers. And that, it's really hard to guard. It was hard to guard all last year for teams. And I think those are kind of my 2 main takeaways. I know they're both offensive, but yeah. I don't know. What do you, what do you, uh, What are you taking away from it?
Well, I think I'll piggyback on sort of what you're saying there. It's first of all, we were able to really throw the ball, I feel like, efficiently a lot this game. You really mentioned the play action. When you have like the threat of the running game that we do, the play action's so successful. You have a mobile quarterback who can roll out with the ball. We have deep threats. And I think there were some improv. Like, I think at least two of those Hudson Clement catches were like scramble drill, like he came back to the ball sort of plays, which, you know, is great to see with the quarterback we have. Garrett Green, a PFF 88 grade on plays with play action, 9 dropbacks for those plays in this game. And then you mentioned it too. It's like, hey, let's do what we're good at. I don't think this is true for many quarterbacks, but Garrett Green's like passing depth stats on PFF are like inverted to what you think. Like in this game, in short passes under 10 yards, he had a 43.8 grade. Medium passes, 10 to 19 yards, a 73. And then deep balls over 20 yards, a 91.9. Like, he's good at throwing the ball deep. We knew this last year. I mean, these are like, in mass, this is like the trends we're seeing. So, build the whole plane out of the two-minute offense is not something we're going to do every drive. But, man, sprinkle some of those in. Like, come out in the third quarter and first drive run hurry up or something like that. Like, just keeping defenses unbalanced or off balance, I should say, I think is really valuable. I think if we want to get into defense, like, what do we take away? You know, we did have a lot of injuries. Trotter is just still a monster, and I was really worried when he went down. He came back out, but this guy's played 4 games in college now, and he's
everywhere.
He's everywhere. So, got some talent. Some young guys contributing. The defensive line, I've been really happy with the way the D-line's played the last 2 weeks, honestly. Like, from the first 2 weeks of the season to these next 2 weeks, the most recent 2 weeks, like, I feel like taking a significant step, at least for me. So, feeling great about that. The secondary still is what it is, but, hoping that we can make the adjustments over the 2 weeks. Seems like we got some different faces in there, and some of that was just due to injuries, like just getting different bodies in there. But you got to pick. He threw it right to us. But Tyron Bradley had a great game. I mean, dude was everywhere. He caused both turnovers. There are some things shining through as a unit. Still a lot of places to improve. But I'll tell you a secret. Nobody in this league's looking too complete right now to me. You look around this league and everybody's got issues, and we have some strengths. Like, we have some strengths. We got some problems too, but let's play to our strengths. You know, we can score 30 a game plus. The defense doesn't have to stop them every time, but you make some turnover, you force some turnovers, and keep things in front of us. I don't know. I mean, Jalen Daniels was the Big 12 player, the preseason player of the year, like 2 years ago. He didn't look that good against us. Like, I feel like our defense, and I know he's having a rough year, but like, we were able to contain that. The running game was really what gashed us most of the day.
Yeah, I think if they didn't go over 200, they went close to it on the ground. I think they might have gone over.
They went like 265.
Oh, okay. So way
248. 248.
Yeah. So that was gashing us. But again, I think that's one of the better offensive lines we'll play. It's definitely one of the better backfields.
His rushing attack in general, I think that's a really good rush attack.
Yeah. And they've been, like, passing struggles aside, I think that was kind of what we talked about in the lead up last week. Passing struggles aside, they've been running it really well. They've been averaging about 7 yards a carry between Neal and Hyshaw. So what they did to us is really nothing different than what they did to Illinois or UNLV. So, you look at it overall, they had 11 drives, if you're not counting the Neal at the end of the first quarter. They had 4 touchdowns, 5 punts, and 2 turnovers, right? So, like, that's a reasonable performance from your defense. I think overall we had 3 pretty good quarters, 1 really bad one. I think the notes, the whole front 6 is really, really active. I think Trotter had 12 tackles, Lathan had 10 tackles, really good. TJ had a bunch of pressures, had the sack. Asani Redwood continues to look good. I'm actually really impressed with Mulba and Russell and Nate Gabriel, the true freshman. Like, the dudes who are playing in the middle of the defense all look pretty stout. I think as much of their praise as we say. I think a lot of the issues with the running game was just the linebackers kind of having bad run fits or taking bad angles. I know they got around the corner on Trey Lathan a couple times, it felt like, where, you know, he kind of took a bad angle and was surprised by how fast either Neal or Daniels or whoever was. You know, the notes, there were a bunch of tackles on the miss end. Like, I think our secondary missed five or six tackles, which was not good. The backside edge setting, they hit two reverses on us, a couple of counters. You know, I think that's something we're going to see more from our opponents going forward, right? Because that stuff's going to be on tape. Mm-hmm. And need to improve there. You know, I think they got Ty French both times on the reverses where, you know, he just... I'm not really even sure he was kind of like trailing the play, but not setting the edge. And so that stuff was bad. Secondary wise, you know, I felt like they had dudes open some of the time that Daniels just missed. I know they had spells beat twice deep in like either a cover three or a quarters. I'm not sure where we're running, but he was clearly in kind of like a deep sideline zone and just let Luke Grimm run right by him. And Daniels missed him both times. So, you know, if he hits those, it probably looks a little bit worse. But, I mean, I think you said it, right? Like, the one thing we can do to help the secondary is have an active front line and get pressure on people. And we've been doing that the last couple weeks since Eddie V went down and TJ Jackson and Redwood started playing a little bit more. So, I think that's a strength that you look to continue to build on. Trotter and Lathan are only going to get better, right? Like, you know, I mean, Lathan's a sophomore, but really, he's only played this is his eighth or ninth game as a starter. It's only Trotter's fourth game as a starter. So those guys are just going to continue to get better and better. You mentioned the injuries. Carrico is out. We lost Aubrey Burks, lost TJ Crandall. Like, there was, I think there was like a 5-minute period there where, you know, Burks is getting carted off in a stretcher and then Crandall gets run into on a punt return, like on a punt cover.
And Milam got hurt.
And it's just like, dude, what is that's when I had the note where it's like, dude, it just feels like the season is not meant to be. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, like you said, they don't have to be good. I think it's something we said coming into the season. He's just like, you don't have to be good. You just have to be not bad. And they've been not bad. They've been bad in spots over the last couple weeks, but they've also stood up and made some stops. I mean, they kicked Pitt's ass for 25 minutes in the second quarter or in the second half last week, held Kansas to 7 in the first half this week. And then when we needed stops in the fourth quarter, they got them. So, you know, I think there's definitely something to build on there. As we get into, to October.
One last thing I think maybe for this game, rushing game for us, kind of an odd box score for us. So Garrett Green leads us in attempts and yards by big margin. We got CJ and Jaheim the ball both 6 times each. I mean, together they just broke 50 yards. So you think Kansas, you know, front 7 or so, really good unit, not too much room for worry here? Or do you think there's some worry in the running game? Like, I don't feel like Jaheim's kind of hit that stride that he had last year in the second half of the year. I think CJ is running hard. I mean, he averaged 6.3 a carry, just didn't get the ball a lot this week.
Yeah.
Are you concerned about the running game, or you think this is just a matchup thing?
A little of both. I do think Kansas has a good front 6, front 7. Depending on who they have out there. In general, no, not super concerned. We went 28. If you exclude the fumble, if you exclude the kneel, 28 for 157 as a team, mm-hmm. which good, pretty good average. What is that? Like, that's like between 5.5 and 6 a carry. so, you know, productive still. It's not like we were getting shut down all that much. And then, you know, I think Garrett really hurt him bad with a lot of stuff that probably wasn't designed. But I don't know. You know, like I was kind of thinking about that, and I'm just trying to remember our deep dives. Like, there weren't a whole lot of defensive lines that we see that I was super concerned about. You know, I think the one, like if we played Utah, I think that I would be really worried about, you know, not being able to run the ball and then you get stuck in passing situations. But, you know, I mean, you're looking Oklahoma State, pretty good defensive front, Kansas State, okay. Iowa State might be concerning. Arizona, I don't think has a super good defensive line. Maybe UCF is one you look at.
But, UCF, you know, right, I think, now is leading the Big 12 in PFF run defense. We're number two, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you know, I think we have a couple weak links up for. I think Yates and Hubbard have not been what we hoped that they. I think there's been a pretty big drop off there between. I mean, obviously from Zach Frazier. Zach Frazier's getting called out today on the broadcast by Tony Romo as a potential Pro Bowler as a rookie. So, you know, that's a tough loss. And you know, I think the issue, like, those guys aren't even playing up to like a league average level. And so, you know, if you run into the wrong matchup, and I, you know, I think I had this as a note to talk about in the recap, and I think you kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, is every team has strengths. Every team has some issues. And so it's just going to be a week to week, matchup to matchup kind of a thing. And, you know, who can take advantage of the other team's weakness in a given week is going to be a huge factor as we get into the conference schedule here. Overall, no, not super concerned. But I, you know, it's, I guess, something to keep an eye on. You know, I'm not worried about it at this point, but, you know, maybe in 3 weeks I feel differently.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, you mentioned Hubbard and Yates. I think the pressure came kind of between the two of them on the second interception, the one that, you know, pressure came through and got to Garrett. He kind of had to half arm it, threw a duck up in the air. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm not concerned about the running game yet. I think we got the pieces there. I think it's fine. I think it was a tough matchup for this week. But, hey, you found a way to win. And, like, I think the theme across this league for all teams, not just us, is going to be, like, week in, week out, find a way to win whatever it takes this week, because there's some varying styles. There are some – the margins are thin in this league. Like, there might be a couple bottom dwellers like Houston, but there's, like, 11 pretty good teams. And who knows which one you're getting week in and week out. So, yeah, I think my takeaway and just general going forward thing is, like, hey, you're 1-0 in the conference. There are several ranked teams who are not 1-0 in the conference. It's wide open, and you just got to go week by week. So I think that's a good segue for our Big 12 recap. I think a pretty eventful week in the Big 12. This was the first, you know, pretty wide open slate where you're seeing a ton of conference games. I mean, you can. There's several places you can start. I'll let you pick first where you want to go.
How about a little after dark action out in Provo, Utah?
Yeah,
with real, you know, Kansas State walking into Provo, fresh off of absolutely mauling Arizona the week before, right? So, like, riding high, and you're watching this game, and first half, BYU's hanging around, and BYU kicks a field goal with under a minute to go in the first half, and then they score 17 points in the next, like, 35 seconds. So they kick the field goal, and then
there's a fumble.
Kansas State fumbles. They scoop it and score, and then Kansas State throws an interception on the first play, and then on the first play, BYU throws a touchdown pass, and then they come out in the third quarter, and so it's 17-6, and they score right away again, and Kansas State continues to mess around, and Kansas State ends up punting to BYU, and the ball bounces around, and their dude, like, picks it up at his own, like, what, like, inside his own 10 somewhere.
He was running backwards inside his own 10.
Backwards, like, inside of his own 10, and then loops all the way around and, like, gets a convoy up the sideline, and they house it, and it was just... I was like, you know, no pun intended or anything. I don't even know if pun's the right word here, but it was like, dude, it would have been a religious experience to be in that stadium as a BYU fan last night. Like, it was one of those things where, like, everything that could go wrong for Kansas State was, and BYU was taking advantage of all of it. BYU 4-0.
I know.
I don't remember what their, I think their over under for the season was 4.5.
It was low. I mean, they beat SMU in that game. They had no business even winning, but they beat them 18-15. I'm doing quick math here, but in about a six, seven minute game clock, they went from trailing to 6-3 to being up 31-6. in like a 7 minute of clock time. I mean, just absolutely crazy. Yeah, I mean, K-State never found the end zone in this game, which is, yeah, what they did last week, not something you expected to see. Definitely the shocker, because I think we said it here last week, you know, Kansas State planted the flag. You know, we're the front runners in this conference. BYU blows their doors off.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Kansas State 0-1 in conference play. West Virginia in Dallas as of today. I mean, can't tell us. Yep. So that was a fun one. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there was a lot of fun games. Yeah, go ahead. You pick the next one.
Yeah, I think next one was probably, at least on the, you know, looking ahead, looking into the week, was the big one, was Utah, Oklahoma State. Utah came in ranked 12th, Oklahoma State ranked 14th. And Utah really kind of squeezed the life out of this game as it went along. Oklahoma State picked up 16 in the fourth quarter, and I would say most of them were kind of after the game was decided. Utah holds on 22-19, but yeah, Utah looked really good. I mean, Oklahoma State, they benched your boy. Bowman was out for they benched him for a few drives, and then they threw him back out there in the fourth quarter because they didn't like the other guy either.
Yep. He almost brought him back. It's that seventh year experience, you know, that you only get from a 25-year-old college football player. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I honestly, Utah smoked them. That game went about how I expected. I was kicking myself for not gambling on it, because I figured it would be the kind of situation where Utah was just going to squeeze the life out of the running game. And, you know, even they were playing Zach Wilson's, they weren't even playing Cam Rising, Zach Wilson's little brother in his second career start. And it's 22-3. Yeah. Like halfway through the fourth quarter, and mm-hmm. Oklahoma State got a couple big plays on consecutive drives and made it interesting. But yeah, I think Utah probably won the week in the conference.
I think so. I think pretty demanding win against, you know, ranked team.
Yeah.
And this was on the road too. I mean, that, you know, Stillwater, we are going in there next. It's not the most fun place to go play. But you get a win in there and it feels really good to leave. So yeah, I think Utah planting their flag now as the top dog as of, you know, one full week for everybody. Real quick, I'll run around the games that weren't close. Iowa State cleans up on Arkansas State. Of course, that's out of conference. Cincinnati, 34-0 on Houston. Bearcats have their first ever Big 12 home win.
Hey, good for them.
Yeah. And it's a shutout. Texas Tech hangs on against Arizona State. I didn't watch this game. They got up early, and then kind of it was a real back and forth game. They hang on and win by a possession. Like I said, didn't really catch a lot of that. Other one was kind of crazy. SMU put 66 up on TCU, which is, man, how the mighty have fallen. TCU, like Sonny Dykes all of a sudden, like, where are we going? It's not the right direction. They were down 17-0 at the end of the first. And I don't know. Hoover threw for almost 400 yards, but I mean, you score 42 points and you're in a game. It's never really that close. It's not a good feeling.
There were a couple games like that this week, not in the conference, yeah. But I mean, JMU hung 70 on North Carolina, scored 50 and got beat by three touchdowns
against JMU.
Yeah, just ridiculous. Not sure what was going on there, but yeah, I think the shine has worn off. The shine has probably fully worn off in Fort Worth. You know, this is one of those where, what did they go last year? Were they 5-7? They ended up not being very good. And yeah. So, yeah, you do something like that again, and I would say you're going into next year probably on the hot seat. Other games.
Last one's the Colorado game.
Colorado. Yeah. Colorado's trash. Baylor is just slightly more trash. I think that one went in overtime. Baylor was up for...
Wait, have you seen the highlights for this one?
No. Go ahead. Yeah, if you have, go ahead.
Okay, so Baylor's kicking a field goal to go up 10 with like a minute to go, and this game's over. And the dude like duck hooks it, like not a chance. Colorado gets the ball, drives it. They have a Hail Mary kind of. They throw this ball, and the receiver is on like the 2 yard line. And, you know, if he catches it, I think the clock's going to run out. And he's all by himself and he drops it. So they have a second Hail Mary from like the 50. It's caught, goes to OT. And then Colorado scores. And then Baylor is driving. They're like inside the five. The running back's got an open lane for the end zone. Travis Hunter goes low, knocks the ball out, and it rolls out of the back of the end zone for the win. I mean, it was a really stupid game. This was also super late. I watched these highlights this morning, but this was real Big 12 after dark stuff. But if you haven't seen these highlights, check them out. It was just an absolute nutty game. Colorado stormed the field after beating Baylor, and then they had a massive party in the locker room, and it was such a college football game. It made no sense. Probably wasn't consequential at all. Like, these teams, I don't think are either that good. It was crazy though.
hey, let them have fun. That's why we play. Colorado. If you're rushing the field and like throwing parties in the locker room after Baylor, that says a lot about the state of your program, I think. So, they're going to turn a corner, though. Who knows?
Give Travis Hunter the Heisman, like, right now. He had 7 catches for 130 yards and made the game-winning defensive play. He played, like, every snap. I mean, this dude's a freak.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He really – he is worth the – like, I'm not really convinced about Shadur. I don't know. I mean, they let him throw 50 times a game. Of course, you're going to put up numbers. But – him, and then I think Jimmy Horn, and then they have the one other receiver who I think are very good, like, NFL quality players. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, Travis Hunter is going to be a top 5 pick next year, probably top 10. So, he's worth, putting up with Deion and all the other bullshit to catch a Colorado game.
Yeah. All right. So let's do Big 12 precap. So moving into next week, I think the game of the week, looking ahead, is Oklahoma State, Kansas State. You have two teams. We'll see how the rankings. Well, I think they are ranked. They're both in the 20s now after the dust has settled. They're both 0-1 in conference. You really don't want to lose this game. So this is in Manhattan, right at high noon. I guess 11 o'clock out there. Massive game for both of these teams. I don't know. Do you have a read? Kansas State's favored by 4.5. I don't know. So two angry teams.
Yeah, Oklahoma State, it's everything that I thought it would be. It's just like all of last year's problems, except they're almost exaggerated at this point. Like, the offense is just a mess because they cannot do anything except for hand the ball off to Ollie Gordon or, just like get the ball out of Bowman's hands, like almost immediately to somebody underneath and then hope that they can do something with it. I think I would lean Kansas State here just because I think they are able to play in more varied ways. Like, I think Kansas State is going to have the ability also to take the running game away and just force Bowman to beat him. And I just, there aren't many good teams that I think Alan Bowman can just beat with his arm. So
true. Yeah, I would lean Kansas State here too, which if that were to happen, we would be traveling to Stillwater against 0-2 Oklahoma State.
Bring them on.
Yeah. So that's a potential something to look out for. Oklahoma State, I think, played a really physical game with Utah. And then this is no cupcake either. So they might be, a little couple weeks of rough games where we're getting a nice rest up before traveling there. That could also play a factor. Other games, BYU at Baylor. That is what it is. BYU sneaks into the rankings at 22 now. Other two desperate teams facing off, TCU, Kansas, both 0-1 in conference. I mean, Kansas, I do feel for them a little bit, being personally victimized by a comeback of that nature a week ago. Yeah, it sucks. But man, they came in ranked. They're 1-3. I mean, that's
ugh. So they're 1-3, and they've lost by a combined 13 points.
Yeah, they're all one possession games.
3-1 position, like, they could very easily be 4-0. Like, I do want to say that, like, I don't think that's the same as us losing to Pitt, because I do think Pitt's bad. Like, Kansas is a pretty good football team. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, and because this is probably never going to happen, I can say it with no fear of repercussions. Like, Kansas would smoke Pitt. Kansas is very good up front on both sides of the ball. Kansas's secondary is good enough that the Hail Mary garbage that Holstein got away with against us would not fly. Like, I think Kansas would beat Pitt pretty bad, which, makes me feel a little bit worse about losing to Pitt. than I already did, and I felt really, really, really bad about it. But you know, we beat a good football team. But yeah. You know, I haven't watched TCU this year. You know, the only time I've seen TCU is when you and I had them on, you know, on one of our four screens in the hotel after losing the game last weekend. And we didn't even have the sound on for it. So, you know, I don't really have a read on them, but I would think, I do think Kansas is good. Like, you know, I think Kansas is probably due to win one of these. I think TCU is going to be the one walking out of there with the L.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be a big one. I mean, Kansas is it's get up off the mat at this point. The season is dying in front of them after having some pretty high expectations. So you expect them to bounce back big, which means TCU might, you know, somebody's got to start 0-2 in that game. Yep. Next game on the slate, battle of the black and gold schools, Colorado at UCF.
Yeah, hopefully no uniform glitches here, or else we're not going to know who's who.
Seriously, both 1-0 in conference. UCF favored by 14, so no love for Colorado and Vegas. I would lean that way as well. Colorado is going to be fun, and they're probably going to win like two more games they shouldn't, and they're going to lose some stupid games also. I just think that's the style of the team. It doesn't seem like a complete team. But yeah, so that's a 3:30, and then we got three night games. 7:00, Iowa State at Houston. This is Iowa State's Big 12 opener. So they're traveling down to Houston, who is just on fire and full of garbage. Not good after getting skunked by Cincy. You can get into this game for as low as $12. Iowa State getting a 2-touchdown. That's factual. I'm seeing it right here. And 2-touchdown favorite on the road, Iowa State. So I don't expect anything too wild there. 8:00, Cincinnati on the road at Texas Tech. We'll see if Cincy's for real. Texas Tech, both teams are 1-0 in conference here. I mean, one of these teams is going to be 2-0 walking out of here. Texas Tech favored by 4. I really haven't watched either of these teams play this year. So that is an 8:00 kick. And the last game of the week, big one, I think. Good one, After dark. I'm gonna have to get used to the Big 12 after dark. I kind of like it, but I don't stay up as late as I used to. So I'm gonna have to, you know, get used to these super late games. 10:15, Arizona at Utah. I think Arizona is still a fine school. They're still a fine program. Utah in the top 10 now. This could be a big one. So I don't know. Any feelings on this one? I mean, Arizona, you expect going to be able to pass the ball. I don't know. I don't know if what's rising, how long he's expected to be out.
I think that there was a chance that he would have played last week, I think. So I would expect him to be out there. Because I think, he just had like a cut on his throwing hand or something. And so.
I think so.
You know, I 2 weeks. Missing two games, that it feels like a lot for like a cut on your hand. So I would expect them to be out there. You have to lean Utah, like what they're going into Salt Lake for that. You know, Arizona has some players. They have two really, really, really good players. But, like, I think Utah's defense is good enough that they're going to be able to handle that. You know, I think Fafita's going to be running for his life. Utah's defensive line is really, really good. Yeah, I would lean Utah there. I think Utah's 2-0, and what you said, they're top 10. I mean, they're gonna
they slid
firm, into 10 firm that up. Week. Yeah,
yep. And then just for your general college football fans, Georgia Alabama, that's a top 5 matchup. It's also at 7:30. So I'll definitely have a screen on with that one. That's gonna be fun. Illinois Penn State also. Illinois up to 19th. They've been playing really well. That's also at 7:30. So some good night games coming in this week.
Penn State outgained Kent State by 600 yards on Saturday.
Ooh. Kent State's like the worst FBS program.
They're the worst. I mean, they're the worst. They're very, very bad. But even so, like, that's significant.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw much of the Marshall Ohio State game.
Saw a little bit.
I will give it to Marshall. They put up a respectable fight. I think the score did not display how close that game sort of felt, at least for the first like half. Like, Marshall played okay. Like, they got
hit with like three haymakers, man. Ohio State scored like three or four like 60-yard touchdowns, 60-plus yard touchdowns in the first half, and it's just like, okay, well,
yep,
that makes it tough. So, but yeah, I was impressed. I mean, Ohio State has an insane roster, and so yeah, the fact, you know, I think they even went down and scored first. They were up 7-0 in the horseshoe. So
they were. They moved the ball for like several drives in the first half.
Yeah,
I mean, it was, you know, they definitely, you know, they took it into the half down 28-14.
You think the Tudor NIL deal in the back of Ohio State's mind a little bit?
I wonder if that's a sway for anybody. Somebody who's like, well, what is Tudors? I'm gonna at least look it up, you know.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know, maybe a backup offensive or defensive lineman. It's like, you know, Columbus isn't really that far from Huntington, so.
It's not, no. Not at all. I was in West Virginia this weekend down in Fayetteville, and I had Geno's and Tudors. So, bang, bang, successful weekend.
So, I've never had Geno's, and oftentimes they're in the same building as well.
Are you kidding me? Dude, Geno's is so good. Geno's is a West Virginia chain.
Pizza?
Yeah, pizza. They have like baked spaghetti and other stuff. Yeah. Their wings are really good too. Get their breaded wings. Mm-hmm. But my wife and I, when we drive in from Columbus to back to Fayetteville, we'll stop in Point Pleasant a lot because it's the first Geno's and there's not a lot of food on the drive home. And we'll stop and go get like a pizza and some wings at the Geno's.
Yeah. Okay.
So good. You got to try it. It's Tudors. I think they might be like owned by the same people or something.
I think they are. Yeah. Because I mean, but like I said, you know, a lot, I like the Tudors that I stopped at on the way home from Pittsburgh the other weekend was also a Geno's. So, you know,
What's your go-to Tudors order?
Ron sausage, egg, Ron. Cheese. Yeah.
Mm, classic.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Mary B, or I tried a Duke this time because I wanted the hash brown. It was good. I
mean, yeah.
It's always good. So
any of them where you throw the hash brown on top is quality.
Yep. All right. Anything else you want to cover? We're four games into the season. What's your reflection? A third of the way in. Man, football goes so fast. I can't believe we're a third of the way through the season. Any takeaways, or we want to just let October play and that's the crux?
I mean, yeah, it definitely is. You know, honestly, like, 2-2, the only reason 2-2 feels like the sky's falling is because of the way we lost to Pitt, right? Like, if we had beat Pitt and then lost to Kansas, and in the alternate reality where Kansas is just 4-0, right? Like, you don't feel horrible about that. Yeah, you know, it's gonna, October's, it's still what it was, you know. You there's the rubber band reaction every weekend just because there has to be. And that's just kind of the world we live in, and the way that we think and talk about sports is every game is a referendum on an entire season, an entire coaching staff, an entire decade, everything. But coming into the season, October was what we had to get. And, you know, we said if we could go 3-2, 4-1 in October, we would feel good about it. Not even October, in that five game stretch, including Kansas, and we're 1-0. So, you know, I will say I'm very much in the I need to see it to believe it phase still, after the way we lost to Pitt, just because it was so much of everything that we have complained about for 6 years with Neil Brown. But, we said it last week, even there's a path back here. But it's four really good teams, on our, you know, immediate horizon here. And, we'll see what happens. I think we're going to have to wait.
Yeah. We have any, questions in this week?
We had a lot of questions. I think I just put it out there. Here, let me, pull them up, play some fun music or something while I.
Yeah, I'll just say, yeah, my four game in review, I guess, is similar to yours. I mean, I think the Pitt game is one that you might have penciled in as a W coming into the season. You find a way to win Kansas. You know, Penn State was always, we thought we might be competitive or close this year. We, you know, didn't get it done. Duquesne was an automatic win. So, you know, you're sitting here. I think if you're 3-1, everybody's like, fine. That's probably right at expectation. Your game back, all that means is you got to go find another one. You got, like I said, the opportunities are there in the middle third of the season. The final third of the season, I mean, you hope a handful of those games are cleanup duty. Like,
yeah,
feels like those are some games that we're going to be reactionary and, you know, make our decision every week because that's what we all do as fans. But you're hoping there's wins to come at the end of the season with Cincinnati, Baylor, Texas Tech, three of your four final games. Okay, you got Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Kansas State, Arizona, your next four. You know, if you win two of those and the last four, that puts you at 8-4. Yeah. Is that enough? Do we need to win three of these next four? Or, you know, the UCF games there at the end, that I would kind of lump that in as another one that it's up in the air.
I'd rather win three.
So, yeah, let's win them all. I mean, you have two of them at home. You have an Oklahoma State team that could potentially be 0-2 and reeling. And then, you know, chances are there. I think everything's still in front of us enough that it's like, we can get it done. You threw one away. You shouldn't have, you can still get it back.
Yep. All right. Questions, everybody. Pod questions. Darugi asks, why does God give his toughest battles to his strongest Mountaineers? I don't know, but just know that you are a better person for going through it. Like, it you is. Know, if yep. you can handle being a fucking, excuse me, I'm not supposed to be saying as many F words. If you can handle being an effing Mountaineer fan, you can handle anything. You know,
it's character building. It's character building.
That's right. And we're hardy for a reason, and it's because we cheer on the old golden blue. Rocky Mountaineer asks, most likely Big 12 team to slap Utah in the face. That's a good question. I pulled up their schedule. Arizona this week is a good candidate. Just because they do have like the high end talent to cause problems for anybody, I think. 10:30 in Tempe against Arizona State here in a couple weeks potentially could be a thing. BYU, although they are going to Salt Lake, but you know, I mean, what is that they call that the Holy War? Yep. Yeah. So you know, weird stuff happens in rivalry games. I don't know about Iowa State giving them issues just because like the nature of the way Iowa State plays, it's not flashy or explosive. And it feels like the kind of thing where Utah might be able to just kind of strangle the life out of dinking and dunking and that kind of stuff. I think you're looking at that last game of the season as well at UCF. That could be tricky because UCF is good. They have good players. They have a good scheme. So I don't know. Not many of these teams, though. I mean, TCU's not going to do it. Houston's not going to do it. Colorado's not going to do it. You know, I think Utah jumping out to a 4-0 start here. Or are they 5-0? 4-0. I think they would be disappointed. I mean, it's kind of what we said before the year. Like, if they don't win 10 against the schedule, they would be kind of a pretty bad season. So, yeah. I don't know. What do you think? Anybody jumping out?
I mean, that UCF trip all the way over to Central Florida at the last game of the season could be a potential trip up. They're playing that. It's already scheduled for 8 p.m. Eastern. So that's like is that a Thursday game or something? That looks November like a, 29th. Or maybe a, I think that's a Friday night game. That could Let's be a see. Potential. Yeah, it's a Friday night game. Friday that's a potential night. Trap. A lot that's of travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, man, the pass laid for Utah. I mean, I think they're good and they're going to be, favored in most or all of these.
It's nice, man. You know, defense generally travels as well, you know, so, and their defense is good. Maddox, Marshall fan asks, why in parentheses do I watch sports? Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think it goes back to the, you get into it, what do you put out of it thing. And it's just because, man, when you care and things go well, there's not many higher highs. So.
Well said.
Yeah. Let's see. Legal Beagle, why did Neil Brown visit the New River Gorge? Because he heard it's easier to bridge a gap there than with the Mountaineers offense. That was just a joke. That was a good one. Okay. Slaw asks, what's the status of Trust HQ? The Southern Forward Operating Base is still closed. My football-related question, what's the deal with Jaheim? Do you think the offensive line drop-off has limited his spark? CJ seems to be running better. Yeah, so Trust HQ is still shuttered, but we did send a representative over there to fire up the generator and just make sure that, you know, the lights were still turning on, all that kind of stuff. The freezer and the fridge still working, still stocked. We don't want the food to go bad just in case, you know, we don't want to have to fully resupply ourselves if we come back in there, you know, here halfway through October. But yeah, the light, you know, still closed down for now, you know, closed until further notice sign. Up, but we did go check on the place and just make sure there hasn't been any, you know, looting or anything like that. over the last couple weeks.
What about Jaheim? Are we worried? Do we think?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, the offensive line drop off is, you know, we kind of said it's like, you know, we're not like worried about it yet, but like it's something that could be a concern here as we get into the meat of the schedule. I just don't feel like we've done a great job of getting him the ball and like spots where he can do anything with it. You know, it feels like every time he gets the ball, he's getting hit behind the line or he's having to at least make a guy miss behind the line. You know, maybe it's more two back stuff, right? Where, you know, you get him in there. I did notice in the second half, we were putting him at receiver and he was kind of, or he was like motioning out of the backfield and lining up in the slot. He had one nice catch earlier in the game, and we know that's something that he can do. So maybe that's like a good way to kind of get him some touches and get some of the swag going again. But yeah, I don't feel like he's really had a chance to do much at this point. I don't know. What do you think?
I think we have a good problem to have, which is like we have like four guys on offense who are like really fun to have in open space. And our job is to get them the ball, like Gallagher or Clement. Obviously, Jaheim and Cole Taylor poses some problems in certain spaces. I think you gotta find ways to get him the ball. Like, I don't know if it's more screens, more like even like out like a wide receiver type screen play. It just doesn't feel like he's gotten the chance to get to the second level. Other than like the first three carries against Penn State, I don't feel like he's really made it past the first level often. And that's where he's really gonna hurt you. So. Maybe a little offensive line, maybe just more priorities of getting him the ball early and getting him warm.
Just doing stuff to get him the ball in space, where he can do something with it. Kyle says it was a no-notes kind of a game. We saw all the phases of Neil. Early success, bed shitting, and inexplicable victory. Question, when do we extend Neil? I think right after we build the statue. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it was a greatest hits. It was a like, it was the greatest hits. The last 2 weeks were the full collection, to be honest. It was like the documentary in retrospect. It was like the good wins look like this, and they still stressed you the hell out, and the bad losses looked like this, and they were like both one play away from each other.
Yeah, the aliens called and they were like, hey, what's it like to be a Mountaineer fan? And we just sent them the last 2 weeks game film. And it was like, oh, Jesus.
Sickos.
Yeah, absolute psychopaths. Cool Hand asks, and I'll let you take this one, Joel. How does our win over Kansas affect LeBron's legacy?
I saw this one, yeah. That's just the common copy you see on every NBA thread ever. I don't know how it affects his legacy. He's a notable Ohio State fan, though he did not go to college for he went straight to the league. But I don't know. There's got to be some kind of LeBron West Virginia connection. I guess Jerry West, maybe, you know, he was with the Lakers front office for a little bit, but maybe not when LeBron was there. I'm not quite sure. It's still pending. I'll check Sports Reference.
I'm sure LeBron's had a Mountaineer hat on at some point in his life. I mean, the colors just pop too nicely to not, you know, do that. But you know, I mean, other than that, obviously has cemented his status as the GOAT. Not much to be said other than that. Rocky Mountaineer, second question. This is a good one. Who do you think that we might be redshirting after this week, since this is a season deciding point? We've hit that 4-game mark. We do have a lot of true freshmen who have already played in all 4 games or have played in 3 of 4 games. So I don't know, Joel, anybody coming straight to mind for you?
That's a good question.
That's a really good question. A good football question for our football podcast.
That is a good ball knower question right there. So I'm just broadly thinking about defense. Like, do we know of guys who we have proven are not ready for this year? And, you know, also injuries can play a role. So, like, I think Eddie V is obviously an option. So he's only played in 2 games. You know, don't rush it back. If it's later half the season, you could still get 2 games in and preserve the red shirt. Jacoby Spells has only played in 2 games so far. Reed Carrigo has played in 3. I don't know what the extent of his injury is, but would love to get him back out
I think just a concussion. I think he'll be back. He was just in the protocol this week.
And then, yeah, I mean, we got a handful of guys with one game. I'm looking at defense. On offense, I mean, I think the obvious thing is some offensive linemen. You know, we have some guys who have already only played in one or two games. Xavier Bosley, Nick Cray.
He's already redshirted.
Yeah, Livingston, the center. Weedman, the guard, he played in several games last year, I feel like coming in. Mm-hmm. But he's only has one game played so far. So any of those guys, yeah, I think I'm sure that that's like much more of a thing that like maybe our GM is sort of thinking about and keeping like player personnel things in mind. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're playing in four games so far, you're probably going to continue to play. I don't know if anybody on this list that I'm scanning is like, yeah, you're done at this point. Jaden's already out, maybe not.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, the true freshmen who have played or the folks who have red shirts who have played so far are people who we've needed to play. So it's not like you can shut them down when you're at a point where you're going into the toughest part of your schedule. Like you need to win these games. You can't not play guys just because you're trying to preserve a red shirt. Like thinking defensively, you know, I think the only true freshman who's played significant snaps is Nate Gabriel, the defensive tackle, but you know, we're so thin on the defensive line that it's not like you can just say like, hey man, we're going to shut you down. Like maybe, you know, perfect case scenario. Like Eddie V comes back before he hits his fourth game. Maybe you can do that, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. I don't think the timelines are going to work out. Mm-hmm. Offensively. Yeah. I mean, anybody who hasn't played yet, you're probably not going to play them until the last four games of the season. If that, you know, I think maybe the one guy where it's kind of interesting is Day-Day, but like, I'm not sure you want to do that because he's a potential, you know, South Florida guys are always potential flight risks. So it's like, if you just are like, hey, Day-Day, by the way, you're done for the year. You know, I don't think that's like a good thing to say to somebody like that. Plus I think he can help us. So, you know,
yeah,
like he's one of those dudes like Gallagher, where it's like, man, every time he touches the ball, it seems like you're holding your breath. Something cool is going to happen. Yeah, I don't know. Great question. I think that the chips have kind of already fallen. Like the dudes who are playing are going to continue to play, and the dudes who haven't are probably going to be the ones you redshirt. So
it's something too. It's worth checking in at like game eight again, because then it's easier to tell, you know, where you're at with some of those if they're still at a two or a three game. Yeah, Day-Day Farmer's only played 10 snaps, but been in three games.
He's been in three games though. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a shame. SCTV man asks your most important game day ritual. So I have over the decades, I have cultivated a very set schedule on game days. I go to my buddy's house before the sun comes up. First beer is always open before the sun comes up. He lives on Willowdale within sight of the stadium. And so, you know, he and I and, you know, a couple of our closest friends all kind of start the day there. For a 12 o'clock kickoff, we will generally rotate to the blue lot between 8:30 and 9. For a 3:30, probably more like a 10 to 10:30 rotation. For a later game, probably closer to, closer to probably 1 o'clock, 12 to 1 o'clock rotation to the blue lot. But on the trek to the ultimate destination in the blue lot, which is in front of the Eye Care Center, I think around C5. Stop at my buddy Al's tailgate, and we'll always drink a beer off the shovel. We talked about that last week. The shovel has become a part of the game day tradition. So always make sure that I get at least a little sip of beer off of the wishing shovel. And then at the final destination, which is the tailgate that I've gone to basically since, well, probably before I was old enough to drink. but we go there, and an hour before kickoff, they do the mystery beer. And so the mystery beer is, there's a guy who's responsible for it every week. He travels far and wide to find just absolute trash beer that we've never heard of. And everybody at the tailgate drinks one. And then my buddy's dad has a concoction called Ouchie Hall. That is a special blend of only two things. You don't need to ask what they are, but it gets you where you need to be. and everybody takes a little cup of Alchie Hall. So those are kind of my game day traditions. Once you get the Alchie Hall down, it's about time to rotate into the stadium and watch the Pride. So, you know, between those three stops, I'm generally in a good spot by kickoff. What about you, Joel?
Dude, that was an incredible answer. I don't even want to have to follow that up. That was such a good answer. You hit on all the bases.
Hey,
so
you know, I'm not an amateur fan out here. Yeah, okay. I live for 6 to 7 Saturdays in the fall. So
great question, great answer. I don't feel like I have as many rituals. I don't go to as many games as I did when I was in Morgantown. I mean, when I was in Morgantown, we'd wake up in Sunnyside. You know, you go and get your case of beer, you walk up, I forget what the even apartment complex is called, but you walk up the super steep hill around like 5th or 6th, and then, you know, crest over the law school hill. We had a couple tailgates we'd go to. I had some game day Vans. They were blue and gold checkered. I had them made custom. And when I left Morgantown, I left him with my friend who lived there for several years. And when I would go and stay with him for the games, they sat in his shoe rack and he's like, I don't wear them, but you can wear them. And I'd wear them for the games when I come in. They weren't lucky. We were fine when I wore them, but you wear them anyway. And, oh man, I'm trying to think like afterwards, after games, you know, maybe try to get like a Pizza Al's pizza. I feel like that's a big one, or hit up Sheetz, 'cause they had that in Sunnyside when I was there. But no, I don't feel like, one other just silly tradition is we kind of had the passing around. Somebody had to buy the all you can eat popcorn bucket, 'cause it's unlimited refills. And it was like, oh, it's your day. You got to get it for this game. And then you had to go and refill it constantly for all your drunk friends. So, no, I like your answer better. That was very good.
I thought of two more. So Friday night, if I do make it up Friday night, varsity club, depending on how hungry I am, 12 or 18 Carolina barbecue wings and a basket of fries. And then when I go into the game, the first thing I do when I go in the game, two Miller Lights and a water. And then I go to my seats. So.
Responsible. I will say, if I come into town anymore, Friday night is fishbowl.
Fishbowl is usually after varsity club. But All right. Rin Hazard asks, if you could replace one remaining opponent, who would it be, and why would you replace them with Houston?
I would replace Kansas State. I feel like has always had our number. We have them at home. I would love to replace that with a nice layup against Houston. That'd feel really nice. The other one's UCF. I think we've mentioned before. That's also a home game, but I don't know. I think we both are a little scared of UCF.
It would be nice to break up the October gauntlet, but the first team that came to mind for me was UCF, and just really, you know, make it a nice easy landing into the to the last month of the season with Houston kicking us off there. All right, Wumbo asks, when's the Neil Brown extension going to be announced? Seriously, though, glad they won, but what do you need to see against Oklahoma State to say, okay, maybe there's something here? I mean, a win. You know, I really don't. I don't care how it happens. I'm sorry, I'm trying to cuss less. I don't care how it happens, but yeah, a win. Like, I mean, there's no moral victories at this point in the season. If you lose the game, you're 2-3. You got to win.
Yep. No, you're dead on.
Brennan asks, does Ren Baker need to do the needful or F off from an idiot living out west? Actually, it was from Brennan, but idiot living out west. you can't at this point. I mean, if we drop the next four and we're 2-6, going into a bye week after Arizona, then, you know, let's talk then.
Yeah, let's talk at the end of October. That's probably going to be my stance for the rest of October, because there's tough games and we're not probably going to win all four of them, but you need two or three of them at least.
All right, since the year asks, realistic expectations in terms of win total for the rest of the year. I'll let you kick us off there.
You win two of these four and you win... So yeah, let's just look scenarios. You win two of the four in October and you win three of the four in November. That puts you at 7-5. I mean, I think that's a very realistic thing. I think 8-4 is right there too. I mean, you kind of lump UCF in with that October slate. You have five games, I think, that are coin flips, and three you should clean up. And you steal three and clean three up, you get to eight wins. It's totally doable.
Yeah, I mean, dude, this conference is blue lot drunk, dude. You know, like, I mean, there we kind of said no, they're like, but there's not a no team has Utah's look good. They do not have an unassailable talent gap, right? Mm-hmm. They have issues. there's no team on our schedule that does not have weaknesses that we can take advantage of. So, you know, like, you know, it's not crazy to think we could win three of the next four. It's not. It's really not. It's not crazy to think we could win six of the last eight and get to 8-4. You know, 7-5 may be more realistic, just in terms of, you know, we certainly have our share of issues as well. I guess I don't know. I'm going to turn this question. Is 7 enough for Neil to keep his job?
Oh man, that's a tough. That's such a 7 would be a rough number. That'd be hard. That'd be hard to downgrade because you go to a bowl game and you know potentially an 8, but whatever. Last year you win 8 regular season games. To go to 7 this year, that'd be hard to stomach. I think just because. If last year was the peak, I don't think the answer is that was good enough. And you feel like this year should have been the peak or should still be the peak based on what we got. So 7 would leave a bad taste in my mouth. I think 8 plus would be enough to save his job.
I think it should be 8. I think it should be 8 for all the reasons you mentioned. So
7 is going to be here's what's going to happen is we're going to win like 3 of the next 4 in October, and then we're going to like blow the last week of the season at Texas Tech or something, and then 7-5. Yeah. And it's going to be, we're going to be in the dumbest limbo of feelings about it all. Yeah, because that's what we do.
Make the rest of Ren Baker's hair fall out. Yeah, I don't envy him because it's definitely going to end up 7-5. it's going to suck for him.
Pick the dumbest path possible, and it'll end up there.
All right, new name who dis asks, now that the Saban school for coaches who can't coach good is closed, where do we send deadbeat coaches asking for a friend?
Pitt.
Oh, love it. Spidey 616, at this point, do we expect all of our assistants to make the end of the year? I think so. I think, you know, historically West Virginia has not been in the business of firing people in the middle of the season. I don't think we've ever fired a head coach in the middle of the year. You know, I don't, off the top of my head, I don't think we've ever let an assistant coach go in the middle of the year. So, you know, I think, yeah, we can probably, you know, I don't know if they're all going to retain their current level of responsibility, but I don't think any of them are going to be canned.
I don't think anyone's getting canned this bye week, and your next case would be 4 weeks later. There's another bye. Our season split in the thirds pretty cleanly with bye weeks. If you lose all the next four and you get housed, yeah, some defensive changes could happen. But yeah, I think that would be the only likely case. I don't think otherwise.
All right, Ben in Chicago, will we use the bye week to actually prepare for Oklahoma State, or will Neil just tell everyone he did, and then RD will let Ollie Gordon back into last season form? Man, if he does anything close to what he did to us last year, then it's going to be one of those things where it's like, dude, just fire Leslie into the sun. The nice thing about Oklahoma State is that they bring back literally everybody from like, you know who Oklahoma State is. Like, mm-hmm. You know, there's not going to be a whole lot of secrets about what's going on there. They don't get a bye. Who do we say they play? Kansas State this week. So like they're going to be coming in
Utah, Kansas State back to back, and then
Utah, Kansas State back to back. So like probably a pretty good spot. I mean, aside from it being in Stillwater, you know, as good of a spot as you could probably hope to catch them in. I know Colin Oliver has been hurt. I don't recall if it was long term or if it, you know, there's a chance that he could be back from us. But you know, he's probably their best defensive player. So you know, if you catch them without him off the back of two really tough games, you know, and there's not a lot of secrets there. So I don't know. Yeah. If we come out and look flat against them, I'm going to have a hard time. I'm going to have a hard time with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you said it.
Okay. Snooter, we're 1-0 on days where I get to watch the game due to a lightning delay. Can we capitalize on this? Do we want to? Thoughts?
Hey, if we're going to win out, let's lightning delay every game. I'm taking that bet right now. Especially if we're on the road. I don't mind a weather delay on the road. Well, I don't know if I should say that, because I know the road team gets like the kind of shittier delay setup. Like I heard that the that Kansas was just like in our tunnel like the whole time. I don't think, you know, the away team gets quite the amenities that we do, but just win, baby. I don't care if that's what it takes. Sure.
Do we want to talk about how the 3 minutes evaporated? Like, I cannot believe, or is there an explanation for this?
It was ESPN incorrectly tracking game, because it was correct. Somebody on Twitter, I tweeted it, and somebody, there was like another source. It was correct. ESPN just, and this isn't the first time this has happened, but ESPN just like totally messed up their data and had the wrong game, the wrong clock times on their play-by-play.
Because I was absolutely incensed by this, where like it's coming down the stretch and it's like, dude, we should have 3 more minutes to make this comeback, and we don't. Fortunately, it didn't matter. We got it anyway. So, you know, ultimately, we eliminated 3 minutes that Kansas would have had to retake the lead. So
smart, really.
Yeah, really worked out nicely. But yeah, lightning delay every game if it means we win, for sure. Saxo Steve, I'm going to TCU Kansas in Arrowhead next week. What would you wear as a neutral fan? Old gold and blue. Like,
yeah, if you're going neutral. Or I don't know, TCU Kansas, you could probably wear like Kansas City Chiefs or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I was wearing the Country Roads Trust polo to the App State Clemson game. Two weeks ago. So, you know, let the flag fly, buddy. You know, let the flag fly. And that's it. That's all of them.
Wonderful. All right.
Clarence Auvois said he should wear assless chaps, which, you know, you probably fit in Kansas City. I just noticed that and wanted to share. So, fly the flag.
Happy bye week. No Mountaineer game this week, so we'll do preview next week for Oklahoma State. Otherwise, enjoy a stress-free Saturday with some good games. I think plenty on the slate to keep you interested. Take your own time as a fan to recover and rest, and make sure that your mental capacities are at their fullest to suffer and stress once again when we get back to it. So thanks as always for listening. You can catch us on smokingmusket.com. You can catch us on Twitter at westbypod with underscores. Make sure you like, follow, subscribe on whatever you're listening on, if it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever, so you know when we drop new stuff. And make sure you're joining the Smoking Musket Discord. Especially fun during a weather delay while we're like picking the next coach of the Mountaineers before we come back and win and decide things are cool again. So always fun in there. That's all we got. Thanks as always for listening. We will catch you next week.
Air gang.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.